Today's Shir Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Lamed Beis. We will begin on Daf Kuf Lamed Beis, Amud Aleph, at the beginning of the Amud by Rava. We learned at the end of the previous Shir, a Chiddush. The Mishnah taught us a din that a Kaisa Kon Chosav L'Ishtai, if somebody writes over all of his estate to his wife, the halacha is that what he has done is only turned her into an apotropos. He's turned her into an administrator of his estate, but not as the wording of what he said means that he's given her the entire estate. Ask the Gemara begins with the following question. Is this halacha that we learned only applicable to Shchimera, or is it also applicable to someone who's Baruch Hashem healthy? And the Gemara explains its question. Do we say the Shchimera who denichalei til shtam and mila? The Shchimera is concerned that he's about to pass away, and as we explained in our previous year, he's anxious that his wife be continued to be respected, and that's why we say when he wrote this wording, what he really meant was just that his wife should be the apotropos, the administrator of the estate, but he didn't mean to give her the entire estate. Avabari, but when he writes, when he's Baruch Hashem still well and healthy, Hakoyihu, he's still Baruch Hashem well and healthy, and certainly if he wants her to get respect, he'll make sure that she gets the necessary respect. And therefore we say that he meant just to actually give her the estate. He wants to get respect for his wife. And one of the ways he accomplishes it is by writing his will in such a wording that his wife should be his Kaisav Kon Chosav. And as Mefarshim explained, there are two ways of understanding what the Gemara means when a Bari is writing the statement. One way of understanding it is that he's really just trying, he certainly doesn't mean that this should take effect prior to his death. But the question is, it's only going to take place after he dies, which may be and hopefully will be many years from now. And therefore the Gemara says, why would he be concerned about getting his wife respect now, getting his wife respect for after his death, which will hopefully not happen for many good years to come? Or we could say, he's already concerned now. On the other hand, another way of learning the Gemara suggests to Rishayim is that what he's trying to accomplish, maybe when somebody writes this type of a document when he's still well, what he's trying to do is get the respect for his wife here and now. And the two sides of the Gemara's question are that that may be his intention, and therefore it's certainly what we say he meant. Or we could look at it the other way. We could look at it, what he means to do is, if he's only trying to get her respect, he could have taken care of it himself. He's Baruch Hashem alive. If he's saying it, it must be that he means for after, that he means that he wants to be his Yoyrish and get all of his assets. Toshma. So the Gemara has this question. Again, the din that we've been learning about Kaisav Kon Chosav Lishtoi, he only made her into apotropos. Is this then only said to a Shchimera, or was it even said to a Bari? Toshma, so the Gemara attempts to bring a raya from the following brisa. It says in a brisa, HaKaisav Nechosav Lishtoi, if somebody writes over his assets, to Kaisav Peiris Nechosav Lishtoi, he writes over that the fruit of his fields should be given to his wife. The halacha is Goyvik Subasim in a karka. So every wife we know is entitled to a ksuba. She will get a ksuba from karka that he owns when he died, from any karka that he owns. If he writes a mechzel shlisha revia, that he's giving over properties, half, a third, a quarter of the property to his wife, the halacha is goyve ksubasa min hashar. She collects a ksuba from the rest. And in understanding the Gemara, there's a number of points that need to be made. The way the Rashbam understands the Gemara is as follows. As we know, as we just discussed in the previous shiur, every wife is entitled to a ksuba. And in the situation that our Gemara is discussing, the person, the husband wrote over a certain amount of the payris of his fields to his wife, or he wrote over a certain percentage of those fields to his wife. So now, according to Rashbam's understanding of the Gemara, let's say the value of the ksuba is $10,000, and let's say the value of what he wrote to her is $5,000, she still has the right to collect the remaining $5,000, even though he wrote her this gift. And we'll discuss more the other option, another situation, in a moment. Other Rishonim, however, explain the Gemara differently. And they explain what the Gemara means to say, that if he wrote to her this gift, it doesn't have anything to do with the ksuba. And therefore, whatever the value of the gift should be or not be, it doesn't have anything to do with the ksuba that she's entitled to claim if they get divorced or he dies before her. Again, we're going to learn like the Rashbam. And the Rashbam explains that the Gemara is teaching us the following chidushim. That not only in a case where he only wrote her payris, he didn't give her any real asset, real ownership of land, is she still entitled to collect the remaining ksuba obligation. But even where he wrote her actual ownership in property, but he didn't give her everything he owned, she's entitled to collect the remaining ksuba obligation. The Rashbam himself points out that there's a sort of inconsistency in the Gemara. Because first the Gemara teaches us the smaller chiddush and then the bigger chiddush. That not only in a case where he wrote her only payris, she doesn't really get any real estate, is she entitled to the remaining ksuba payment. But even in a case where she gets real estate, she's still entitled to the remaining ksuba payment. But if that's the style the Gemara is using, so the Gemara should have said Reviya Shlish Mechza, because Reviya is less of a Chiddush than Shlish, and then Shlish is less of a Chiddush than Mechza, if that's the style the Gemara is employing. Why is there this inconsistency? So the Rashbam explains that indeed the Gemara should have gone in that track, Reviya Shlish Mechza. The reason the Gemara didn't, because the Gemara wants to teach it to us, because the wording in the Gemara throughout Shas is always Mechza, Shlish, and Reviya, so the Gemara stuck to its usual terminology. Adam Mefarshim explained the way to understand Mechza, Shlish, and Reviya, that the Gemara should remain consistent, is as follows. First thing is that the Gemara teaches about her only getting payris. The next case was where she's getting Mechza, doesn't mean that she's getting Mechza, or she's getting Shlish, or she's getting Reviya. On the contrary, what the Gemara is teaching us is, Mechza is where she keeps half the field, Shlish is where she keeps only, a third is kept by him, and she gets two-thirds. Reviya is that she keeps three-quarters. So even though she's getting so much, she's still entitled to the remaining ksuba payment. That's the first case of the Braisa. Continues the Braisa. Kosov called Nechosov Lishtoi. But let's say not that he designated a specific gift to his wife, but he wrote to her all of the Nechosim, all of his estate, and Navi Yotzlov Shtar Chayv. And the way we understand the Gemara is as follows. As we've described the situation many times previously, if we look at every married Jewish man, if we were to do a title search on him, he would never come out as an individual without a mortgage. Because every Jewish married man has a mortgage, his wife's ksuba. And therefore, any obligation, if he owes anybody money, if that obligation only came after he got married, and now he passes away or divorces his wife, the obligation to his wife comes before the obligation to the debtor, because we go in the proper order, and the ksuba obligation came at the moment of his marriage. Our Gemara discusses the following situation. We wrote all of the estate to his wife, and the Gemara's question now is, what does such a gift represent? Does such a gift represent that she's being meichel any suba obligation to him? And therefore, if now somebody who's owed money by the husband will come, even though the ksuba obligation came first, it wouldn't make a difference, because she was meichel her ksuba obligation when the husband wrote all of his assets over to her, his estate over to her. Or do we say that just because the husband wrote over all of his estate to her, he didn't mean to write it to create a situation that she should be a loser by it, and that when the person that is owed money to will have precedence over her. That's the Gemara's discussion. Kosef kol nechosef lishtai. He wrote all of his estate over to his wife. And now v'yotzla shtar choif. So as I said, under normal circumstances, if she got married before that choif was there, she comes first. The question is, does the fact that he wrote over all of the estate to her change that? Rav Elazar Omer, Tikra Matanasa V'tam L'Ksubasa. Rav Elazar says she didn't accept the gift to hurt herself. And therefore, if accepting her gift, she will end up losing out the ability to collect the ksuba, that's not what it was meant. So we'll rip up the gift, and she'll get a ksuba. Chamer Mino, Tikra Ksubasa V'tam L'Matanasa. When she accepted her gift, what she meant by accepting her gift was that her ksuba obligation is waived. And therefore, if the debtor comes, he takes precedence, v'nimtza karachas mikan anekan. And she ends up losing, because she'll lose the gift, because the gift that she got is going to be used to pay the obligation to this bal chayiv, and her ksuba, which actually came before the chayiv, she won't be able to receive, because by accepting the gift, she waived that opportunity. The Rashbam says that the wording of the Gemara is not really accurate. Because the Rashbam says as follows. Yes, she accepted a gift. And yes, according to the Chacham, as we will continue to discuss, by accepting the gift, she waived that ksuba obligation. But what does that mean? She waived that any assets that her husband owns are no longer mortgaged to her ksuba. But let's say that gift, HaKosef Kol Nechosef, was written today, and he's still alive, and he could still amass new assets. Those assets weren't gifted to her. And those assets, she didn't waive her lien on. And therefore, she shouldn't rip up a ksuba, says the Rashbam, because if he gets any new assets, those assets will be mortgaged to a ksuba. That's the Rashbam's understanding of the Gemara. Ritva conceptually agrees with the Rashbam, but Ritva says maybe this is being written by a Shchimera, and the chances of a Shchimera getting new assets are very slim. He's almost dying. So conceptually, there may be new assets. Practically, it's not going to happen. However, the Yad Ramah has a different understanding of the Gemara. And the Yad Ramah's understanding of the Gemara is that when she accepted this gift of a Kosef Kol Nechosef Lishtoi, not only did she waive the right that she has to all of the assets that the husband owns, but she also waived her rights to all future assets. And therefore, Tikra Ksubasa, as the Gemara says, she no longer has a Ksuba obligation. Vomer Yehuda, Hanachtem. Yehuda Hanachtem said, Maisav Ira Dova Basa Chaisi. There's in fact such a situation that happened with my niece, who was a Kala, or Bra Mais Lefnei Chachamim. And the question was, came to the Chachamim, where the husband wrote all of his nechasim to the wife. And according to the Chachamim, what that represents is that she's waiving her ksuba lien, v'amatikra ksubasa, v'tamar al matanasa. By accepting the gift, she loses that her ksuba obligation. And now the bal choiv could take away anything that's owed to him. And if all the money of that estate is owed to different Bali Choiv, Nimtzus Karachas Mikan and Mikan, she ends up losing. Asks, so the Mefarshim discuss, what's the Gemara trying to tell us, this story of Rabbi Yehuda Nachtam, and giving us all the details, his daughter-in-law was his niece. So, I saw a number of pshatim. One pshat is that the Gemara is just telling us a story, and as is very common in the Gemara gives us as many details as possible. Another pshat is the Gemara is paskening like the Chachamim, which means that when somebody wrote over Kol Nechasov Le'ishtoi, the wife ends up being a loser. And the Gemara says, even in a situation like the situation of Rabbi Yehuda's daughter-in-law, who besides being his daughter-in-law, was also his niece, so there was obviously a close relationship there, and he certainly was concerned for the welfare of his daughter-in-law, still, for this girl, she was his niece, his daughter-in-law, the halacha is that if it was a situation of a kaisav kal mechasav l'ishtai, she's nimtzus karachas mikan mikan. A third shot that I saw is that the Gemara is teaching us a very big chiddush. We know, as we have been discussing, that a married Jewish woman is entitled to ksuba. But when does the ksuba obligation begin? When there's nesuin. The Gemara is teaching us here that this couple, because there was such a close relationship, when she was only a kala, when she was only an arusa, they already wrote her a ksuba. But besides writing the ksuba, they also wrote her kol mechasev. So here we see what a wonderful close relationship there exists. That even though they aren't yet obligated to write a ksuba, they already took it upon themselves. So we would think he certainly isn't intending to hurt her. Of nimtza karachas mikan and mikan, still, that's the din. The din is the din. And if it was a situation of a kaisav kol mechasev, she waived that lien, and therefore the Baal Chayv comes first, even though normally he doesn't. Now, let's learn the Gemara. Tama, so why does she lose her ksuba? Because as we've been explaining, the Yotzal Ashtar Chayv, the Baal Chayv comes, and once she waived the ksuba lien, she loses her position. Hala Yotzal Ashtar Chayv. If not for that, the halacha is Tanya. She would indeed become the owner of the entire estate. Now let's understand what are the circumstances. B'mai, what is the case that this price is referring to? Ilema b'shchimera, if we're going to say that this price is referring to the situation of a shchimera, and a shchimera wrote to his wife, Kol Nechasov, and was saying that in a normal situation, where Baruch Hashem, he doesn't owe any money, she becomes the owner of the entire estate. How can we say that? Didn't we just learn in the previous shir and said this in the introductory remarks to our current shir? That if Kaisav Kol Nechasov L'Ishtoi, if somebody writes over his entire estate to his wife, we don't say that he means to make her an apotropos. Rather, we don't say that he meant that she should become the owner of the entire estate. All he intended to do was make her an apotropos, so why are we saying that she owns the entire estate? Elalav. How must we explain the case of this brisa? That's talking about a bari. And what do we see from here? What we see from here is that even though by a shchimera, the halach is that a kaisav kol nechasov l'ishtoi, she becomes an apotropos, that's only by a shchimera. But by a bari, a kaisav kol nechasov l'ishtoi, it means what it says, and she becomes the owner of the entire estate. So at this point, it seems, we have an answer to the question that we began our shiur with. Rava began the shiur with a question. This halacha of a kosov kol nechasov l'ishtoi loyasa al apotropos, is it strictly by shchimera, or even by a bari? It seems that it's only by shchimera. So tomorrow, no. We will say that this price is speaking about a shchimera. I was talking about a shchimera. Why does she become the owner of the estate? She should become only an apotropos. If you will recall, at the end of our previous year, we discussed that even though the halacha is, as I just said, that a kaisav kol nechasov l'ishtoi le'os al apotropos, even though the piece of paper says that she's an apotropos, what he really meant, that she really is the owner of the entire estate. What he really meant was to make her an apotropis, because he just wants to show respect. In certain situations, we can't say that's what it means. Because by an ishtar ruso, they only have erusin, or ishtar gerusha, where they're a divorced couple, so he's not looking for her respect. There we have to explain that it means as it says. Everybody agrees to that. And that's what the Gemara is saying. That's what the Brice is referring to. It was ishtar gerusha, ishtar arusa, where there, even though it was kaisav kal nechasav, it doesn't mean that she's an apotropis. That's not what it means. It means that she's indeed the owner, and that's where the Chachamim say, Nimtza Kairach Mikan Mikan. The Rashbam points out that even though the Gemara distinguishes between Ravina and Rabbi Avira in the way it answers the question, or disproves the contention, says the Rashbam, there's really no nafkamina. Because as we explained at the end of the shir yesterday, the only point of difference between Rabbi Avira and Ravina is in the case of Bas Ben Habonim. How do we define when a Kosev called Nechosev Lebitoi Ben Habonim? But by Ishta Grusha and Ishta Nesua, we certainly say that he meant to give her the entire estate and not just make her an apotropis. And therefore, there's no point. So why does the Gemara separate the terrace between Rabbi Avira and Ravina? And Ravina says the Rashbam, because in the previous Gemara, they were separate because they have different opinions. In that case that I just mentioned, so the Gemara keeps them separate. But as far as our Gemara is concerned, there's really no argument. And we're talking about an Ishta Grusha, Ishta Nesua. With their Kaisav Kal Nechasav, the halacha is that he means what he says. And since he means what he says, his intention clearly was to give her the entire estate. And as the Koyt HaCham Nitzakarech Mikan HaMikan. The Ritva makes an interesting observation. How do we understand the opinion of the Chachamim, says the Ritva? Because the husband was nice to her, and he wrote over his entire estate to her, so she is Moichel her Ksuba obligation. Says the Ritva, that you could say by an Ishtar Rusa. They're starting their life together, and there's wonderful respect towards each other. Wonderful relationship here. He's writing over everything he owns to her, and she in turn is being Moichel her Ksuba obligation. Can't say that by an Ishta Grusha, says the Ritva. They're getting divorced. They got divorced. So Ritva says that even though the Gemara equates Ishta Grusha and Ishta Arusa, it's not really to be equated. It's because in the previous Gemara they were put together, they're put together here, but they really have different dinim. Other Rishonim disagree with Ritva. They say, even if they're getting divorced, still, that doesn't change the fact that that life is a two-way street. And if she's getting all of his nechassim, she in turn is going to be Meichel, the ksuba obligation. Furthermore, the Rishonim say that the discussion we're having here is when he wrote her all of his estate. What would be the halacha? There's no question. He goes and he turns his wife into an apotropis. No more. Is she Meichel or ksuba or not? Most Rishonim are of the opinion, no. You know when she's say to Rishonim, you know when she's Meichel Ksuba obligation? When she gets something in return, she got the entire estate. But if she didn't get the entire estate, all she got was covered. Covered doesn't pay your bills. And therefore she's not Meichel Ksuba. There are some Rishonim that say that respect is also something. And the fact that he made her into apotropis, and that has value to her because it shows that he's respecting her, and he's expecting her children, his family to respect her, is enough of a reason she will be Moichel Haksuba. Says the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yosef ben Menuhin, Amar Rav Nachman. Halacha, the halacha is, Tikr Ksubasa, that in a case we wrote over all of the estate to her, she taka rips up the Ksuba, v'tamarat v'tanasa, v'nimtzis karechas mikan mikan. She ends up losing. We follow the opinion of Chachamim. So we're trying to make an observation. What's the Gemara saying? That we follow the opinion of Chachamim. Ask the Shem, so what doesn't the Gemara just say? Halacha Chachamim. So I saw two truths. We just learned in a shiur the other day that when a Rebbe says the halacha is like an opinion, derech limud, that doesn't mean you should follow the halacha lemaisa. So Reb Nachman wanted to teach his Talmidim. I'm not just saying that the halacha is like the Chachamim because I think they're right. I'm saying that halacha is chacham, and I want you to paskin like the Chachamim. So how did he get that message across? By completely repeating the opinion of the Chachamim. Another Pshalit from Rishayim. Because as we will, Mitzvah learn, there are questions posed on the opinion of the Chachamim, and therefore maybe we shouldn't pass like the Chachamim. So if Nachman wants to express that even though I know there are questions on the opinion of the Chachamim, the Halach is like the Chachamim, and that's why I'm saying it expressly. The Rishayim, however, do make the following point. That even though we're saying the Halach is like the Chachamim, and if she accepts Kaisav Kol Nechasav of Lishtayin, she accepts the entire estate, she gives up her ksuba obligation, we know that that's not the only obligation that a woman is entitled to when there's a divorce or death. She's also entitled to get back her Nechsei Malog, Nechsei Tzoyin Barzel, etc. They explain that our Gemara's discussion is limited just on the base ksuba, but the other payments that she's entitled to, that she will remain entitled to, even though Kaisav Kol Nechasav Lishtayin. Ask the Gemara, Lememra, Vloyazar Rav Nachman Basa Umdanam. Let's think about the situation. Ask the Rishayim. Explain the Rishayim. What's she doing? By accepting the gift, she loses her right to collect the ksuba, which may end up creating a situation that she gets nothing. Because if the debts are equal to the entire value of the estate, she's left with nothing. Now, if you ask the woman when she was getting all of the, or you had to make an exception, assumption, you don't have to ask, is that what you want? Nobody's going to agree to that. She's only willing to accept the gift if it's to her benefit, not if it's to her detriment. So why is that considered a gift? The Vatanya, we learned the Braisa. Haresh Aluch Benoy L'Medina Siyam. There was somebody that traveled to Medina Siyam, V'shamash Shemes Benoy, and he heard that his son passed away. And that was his only Yairish. Nebuchadnezzar's Yairish passed away. So since his son died, he wrote his Yerush to someone else. Vakach Babanayim, Baruch Hashem, it was an incorrect report. And his son Baruch Hashem shows up. The halach is what he wrote still remains a gift. Matanos Matana. Rav Shimon ben Nasi Omer, Ein Matanos Matana. What he wrote is meaningless. Sheila Hoye Yedeya, were he were aware that Baruch Hashem, Shabbanoi Kaim, that his son is still alive, like Kasvam, he would have never written it. Vam Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman paskins, halachik Rav Shimon ben Nasi. So we see that we do follow the Umdana. So why here don't we follow the Umdana? That she would have never accepted the gift if accepting the gift means that she loses her ksuba payment. Answered the Gemara, in the case of the Yerusha, certainly no father would have written this away from his son unless only based on the report. Shani, here, she might have been willing to give up a ksuba, even if it ultimately means that she won't get any money. Why? Because Shani Hassam, the Nichol, the Tepel Akela, the Ksiv Nilo, Lahana Nechassam. You know, covet is also something. And the covet that she got, that her husband wrote over his entire estate to her, may be valuable to her, even if it means ending up with no money, with no ksuba payment. The Rishonim, however, on this Gemara, that the Gemara says a very bechidish, that if somebody wrote a will on the erroneous report that his son is dead, and then Rav Shem's son is alive, that the Gemara is passing that will is null and void, make a number of exceptions. Number one, they say, it's only in a situation where there are no other sons. So what happened was there was one son. He got a report that Rechman Tzlan, his only son, passed away, and therefore he chose another person to get his will. He didn't want his brothers to be his Yarshim, for example. There we say, and then Baruch Shem, the son is alive, that what he wrote is a mistake. But in a case, say the Rishonim, where he had other sons, so one son died, and he had other sons, and he wrote now a will to give it to somebody else, why didn't he write it to the other sons? Why didn't he write it to somebody else? There what he stands, what he wrote stands. Another point that the Rishonim make, Kivega discusses this also, this Gemara is only referring to a situation that immediately after this erroneous report of his son's death, did he write this will. But let's say he becomes aware of this. He only writes this will years or time later, then it won't be the same din, because he obviously meant to do it no matter what. Another point the Rishonim make is only if he wrote all of his assets to this other person. So it's obvious that he's making this new will based on the erroneous report. But let's say he didn't write all of his assets over to somebody else. So it's obvious that he's not looking, that he means what he's doing, and what he does will stand. Another point we're trying to make is that the Gemara says, Kosev l'acherim, that he wrote the will to someone else. But let's say he wrote the will to Hegdish, to Tztaka, who would have a different halacha, that if it turns out that his son, Baruch Hashem, is alive, the Tztaka gets its money, the Hegdish gets its money. The Rambam also makes a point. He says that the Rambam says it's only referring to a situation that the person himself is a Shchimira. He doesn't expect to amass, as I said earlier, any new assets. But if he expects to amass new assets, then this thing wouldn't apply. Interesting shaila that was posed to the Mram Lublin. There was a person who never had any children. And he wrote a will that his estate should be divided, however he wrote the will. And then Baruch Hashem, he has a son. And before he has a chance to change his will, he dies. What's the halacha? Says the Ram Lublin, based on our Gemara, that was certain that he only wrote the original will because he never had a son. If he had a son, we could be sure, based on our Gemara, that he would want his son to be his Yairish, and the original will is null and void. But then the Rishonim asked a very obvious question. One of the basic concepts that we've discussed, that we've learned throughout Shas, is Dvarim Shebalei Vein Dvarim. Something that I'm thinking doesn't have any halachic significance. So why, asked the Rishonim in our Gemara, were we sure that he only wrote this will because he got this mistaken report that his son passed away? Do we say that this new will is null and void? It's Dvarim Shebalev. And Dvarim Shebalev ain't Dvarim. Answer the Rishonim, and this is a very important concept in halacha, that even though the rule is indeed Dvarim Shebalev ain't Dvarim, where it's obvious that this is what he meant, it's not considered Dvarim Shebalev. And the Tzais uses this concept to discuss a very interesting question. He says, somebody owes me money, and the due date has passed. And it's a person, I see him every day, and it's already years that I haven't asked him for the money. So it's safe to assume that I was Michael. Why didn't I ask all these years? It's not like I didn't see the liver. And then one day I decide to go over to the liver and say, you know, you owe me money. And the liver says, if I owe you money, why didn't you ask me all this time? You saw me. You must have been Michael me. Says, so we would think, what's the din? Says the Tzais. If our Gemara is teaching us now that Dvarim Shebalev sometimes is counted, where it's obvious, this is a similar case, where it's obvious that I was Michael, why didn't I ask for the money all this time? Not only should I not ask for the money, and not only can't I demand the money, but there's a question of Geneva. Because if I come to you and ask you for money that you really don't owe me, it's a question of Geneva. And therefore the halacha says, the Tzais, we have to be very careful if I'm allowed to demand the money. Continues the Gemara. It's not awesome. We learned in the Mishnah. If somebody writes over his estate to his sons, the kashuv l'ishta karka kashu, and he leaves over for his wife just even a small piece of property of the ksubasa. That means she forfeited her right to a ksuba. Ask the Gemara, Shum the kashuv l'karka kashu, because he wrote to her a small piece of property of the ksubasa, that means she forfeited a ksuba. So the Gemara gives three truths. This Mishnah is referring to a situation where she participated in the Kenyan, and her fact that she actually participated in the Kenyan, the Rishonim said it was her kerchief that was used for the Kenyan Sudar, it's a proof that she's agreeable to this. Shmuel Amar, Mechalik Lefenevi Sheisekes. It was done in her presence, and she's quiet. And as the Rishonim explained, you need two things here. Number one, that she gets a small portion and she's quiet. Because were she not to get anything, says the Rashbam, we'd say she's quiet because she doesn't want to fight with her husband. But here we have two things happening. Number one, she is getting something. And number two, she's quiet. That proves to us that she is accepting of the situation. And in fact, the Pesach can say, from here we see that shtika kaida should not be used. Otherwise, why does she have to get a portion? Why don't we just say the shtika kaida? The answer is we can't just employ shtika kaida unless there's a reason to say that shtika kaida should be used. Rabbi Yosef Rechanin Amar, Barim Eloi Tli Kakuzub Ksubasei. When he gave her the property, he told her, this is going to be for your ksuba payment, and she agreed, which means as follows. As I just said a moment ago, shtika kaida doesn't mean anything without something backing it up. So just because he said it and she didn't respond, that doesn't mean that she's agreeable. It's only in this specific situation of ksuba where we have a more broader definition, a more broader application of shtika kaida. Why? Because by ksuba we're more makel. Where do we see that we're more makel by ksuba? Another area of halacha, that a woman who's collecting her ksuba, even though normally a choiv, an obligation, a debt, is paid from beinonis, a ksuba is paid even from ziburius. Why, taka, are we more lenient when it comes to shilas of the payment of a ksuba? Answer to say to Rishonim, the Rishbam says it, because we have a rule throughout Shas, tav lemesef tandu, melemesef armla. Women are anxious to be married. And here too, the woman in her desire to be married will accept this type of a situation where the husband says, Talik subaseich, this is going to be for your ksuba payment. And even though we don't know if she really accepted it, because she didn't say anything, but ksuba will be good enough. Tanan. Says the Gemara, we learned in that Mishnah, Rav Yossi, Omer, im kiblo leo, if she accepted what he said, afa pishloi kosov lo, even though it wasn't written of the ksubasa. Machlokes Rishonim, what does it mean, kiblo leo? Some Rishonim define kiblo leo, that she accepted the gift. Others say that she accepted what the children will get. Others say you need a combination. She accepted what she gets will be hers, and what the children get will be theirs. A fourth pshat I saw, kibla leah, is this is a woman that says, whatever my husband says is fine, then the halacha is that there's no ksuba obligation. In kibla leah, if she accepts on herself whatever my husband, the various pshat I just said, Av Pish Lakosov Law, says Rabbi Yossi of the Ksubasa, she forfeits the Ksuba payment. Michlal, if this is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, it's obvious that Tanakama Sova, Ksiba, the Kabbalah boy. This is the Gemara's question. We just gave three different pshatim, the Gemara just gave, three different pshatim in the opinion of the Tanakama, which are fairly lenient pshatim. She participated in the Kinyan, she got a little shear. The three truths that we just learned. Ask the Gemara. It's obvious that the Tanakhama is more machmer than Rabbi Yossi. And for the Tanakhama, this isn't enough. So how could these manda omrim, these opinions explain the Tanakhama that way? The Tanakhama isn't going to be lenient like Rabbi Yossi is. For as the Rishonim explained, Ritva explains, if the Tanakhama is lenient, so what's Rabbi Yossi responding to him? The Tanakhama is more machmer. So how can we explain the Tanakhama that way? The Chitema, and if you'll perhaps suggest that the way to understand that Mishnah is the Kula Rabbi Yosihi, that there's no machloikus in that Mishnah, rather the entire Mishnah represents the opinion of Rabbi Yosihi. Says the Gemara, you can't learn the Mishnah that way. So Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda explains, Eimasai Shoyish Shom Kiblala. She was there and she accepted. Avul Hoyish Shom Kiblala. Or kibbalah leah v'lo hayis sham, one of these two things were missing, loy of the ksubasa. She didn't lose, she didn't forfeit the ksuba payment. So yufta to kula to yufta. So all of these explanations of the Tanakhama, that give the Tanakhama, that according to the opinion of the Tanakhama, according to these explanations, it's very easy for the wife, to forfeit her ksuba payment, are obviously incorrect. Ask the Gemara. Omele Rav le Rav Nachman, Harav, Hashmul, Harav Yosi, Bachanina, Mama Israel. We had all of these explanations What is the circumstance when a woman gives up her ksuba payment? What do you hold? Amalei. So he says, Sha'ani Omer, my opinion is, the kivin sh'asa shutav ben abonim, the fact that he made her a partner with his children, and she accepted that partnership, that's when of the ksubasa. It manami, and so did we indeed learn, Amar Rav Yosef ben Menuni, Amar Rav Nachman, kivin sh'asa shutav ben abonim, once he makes her a partner with his children, that's when of the ksubasa, she loses her ksuba payment. Ask the Gemara. Bari Rava, similar question to what we've been having. Bari Rava, but Bari Heich. What would be the din if this was done by a healthy person? Me meaning, the Shchimira, who the yard of the Leslie. By Shchimira, she knows that this is what the Rajbam explains, that the chances of him getting any new assets is very slim, because he's about to die. That's where Kamachla, she gives up her, so when she accepts this position in the assets of her husband, what she's doing is she's being meichel haksuba obligation. Avo b'bari, if the husband is still baruch Hashem healthy, savra hadukani. She says, even by accepting this partnership with the son, it doesn't mean that I'm giving up my ksuba payment, because my husband, even though he's divided up all of his assets, and what will be my ksuba payment? He'll get new money, new assets will accrue to him, and from those new assets, she will get her ksuba payment. Adoma, hashtamiyas lesla. When she accepted this arrangement, she's accepting that she doesn't have from where to collect her ksuba payment, and she has no way of knowing that her husband's going to get new assets, and therefore she's not entitled to the ksuba payment because she's been completely moichelit by a bari. The Gemara remains with a taiku. Says the Gemara, Hahuda Amal Lahu. There was somebody that said, Palgal Abras, half of my estate should go to my daughter, to one daughter, or Palga, another half of my estate, Labras, should go to another daughter, the Tilsil Itis of a Peri. And my wife should get a third of the Peris that my estate produces. Ikla Rav Nachman Lasura. Rav Nachman came to Sura, Olagad Ber Rav Chizda. And he came to visit Rav Chizda, and Omalei, and he asked him, Ki Gavna Mai, what will be the din in such a circumstance? Does this represent that she's being Meichel Haksuba payment? Omalei Hachyam Shmu. So he said, Shmu Toras, Afilai Hiknua Eladekat Echad Lukbe Raisav, even if she took ownership just of one palm tree, that represents of the ksubasa that she's giving up her ksuba right. Amalei. So he said to him, your comparison is weak. Because Eimad Amish Shmuel Hossam, where did Shmuel say that her acceptance represent a forfeiture, a giving up of her right? Diknala Begufa Da'ara, where she got a piece of property. Hacha Pera. All she got was just the payers. She didn't get any real ownership in real estate. So Rav Chizda said, I misunderstood your question. I thought, this is what we're trying to explain, I thought that when you posed the question and you told me about her getting the payers, it didn't mean just payers. It meant that she owns the tree from which these payers are coming from. But if it means just the metaplin comrade, that all she took was metaplin, that all she took was payris, not any real estate, metaplin vada loy kamina. I certainly did not mean to believe that if all she got was metaplin, that would and accepting those metaplin would represent that she gave up her ksuba payment. Certainly that isn't enough to create a situation where a woman gives up her ksuba payment, and she certainly will continue being entitled to the ksuba payment only where she actually got real estate, dekla, tree, or a piece of property, will Shmuel teach us that that's when she gave up a ksuba payment.